Who's gonna solve the murder of Bruce Wayne?
I am gonna find who did this.
Anybody wanna give me a crash course on being vigilante?
Are you really the Joker's daughter?
Wonder who will protect Gotham now that Batman is dead?
Welcome back to the Gotham Knights Watch podcast. We are part of the Fandom Limb Media Podcast Network. So if you want to listen to other pop culture podcasts, go to fandomlimb.com. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Jake. And we're really excited to have you guys back. We are going to be talking about episode 2, Scene of the Crime. Sarah, what were your initial thoughts after finishing the episode this week?
I loved all the character work we got in this one. I felt like we got to know them all a little bit better, and it wasn't quite as forced as like pilots need to be.
Absolutely. I did not feel quite as overwhelmed after this one. It was paced much better, and there was not so much exposition and world building that had to be dumped on us.
Yeah, everything that needed to be done in the pilot. Yeah.
Yep.
Now they have the established world and are allowed to just play in it.
Yeah, and we got to meet the characters a little bit more intimately and find out some of where their trajectory might be taking them. So,
yeah. So we start out, my immediate question was, how did they find the Batcave?
Yeah, so the opening scene is the GCPD raiding Wayne Manor and the Batcave. Again, Harvey Dent's doing his ride-along with the police.
Well, I feel like he did this one on purpose. He planned to be involved.
He needed to see what Bruce was up to downstairs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess if they knew that Bruce Wayne was Batman, I mean, is... is it general knowledge that Batman has a Batcave? Like,
I wouldn't think so. Like, yeah. How would people know that?
I don't know.
My thought was, like, did Cressida tell them? Did she know about it? But she says she didn't.
Yeah, at least when Harvey pushes her while they're standing in the Batcave, she admits to no knowledge of his dual identity or that the cave existed at all.
And we know that that's a lie.
We know it's a lie, but only from the final moments of the first episode. So we really don't know her connection to anything other than she burned the last will and testament paperwork.
Yeah. And I really like this in between Cressida and Dent scene here. You know, Dent is kind of in shock. Like, holy crap, my friend has a Batcave. And he's saying to bag and tag everything. And Cressida's like, I loved her talking about the irony of the police who can't stop any criminals are now criminalizing the guy who actually could stop them.
Yeah. And the things that he uses to stop them, his bat computer, his batmobile, all of his little gadgets, the police are taking. And my initial thought as a Batman nerd was Bruce has got to have some kind of like safety measure or fail safe to his computer system that's going to shut them out, hopefully. And they're not able to suddenly discover all of the secrets, you know, beyond the fact that he's Batman and has a Batcave. I hope that there's a scene, you know, like Nedry from Jurassic Park, like,
Yes, I would imagine he would. But I'm kind of hoping that there's going to be like a new office at the GCPD that's like has the Bat computer and all that stuff. And then just one person's job is to try and figure out their way into it.
They could call up Barbara Gordon, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure she'd be willing to help out.
It was very interesting with Cressida because there were a lot of questions left with her at the end of the very end of last episode, and we got some answers, but not till much later in this episode about her. So they initially give us the thought that she is still a good guy.
Yeah. So we go from the scene transition with a song by Garbage. I was very excited for that. And it is the kids, I'm still calling them that, but the knights, I guess, are stealing. And there is Joella putting Janus cosmetics on, which I didn't catch when I watched the episode, but I saw that the creators were tweeting pictures of it and like calling it out that that's from the comics.
I did notice while we were watching it, I'm like, man, that name sounds really familiar. I didn't want to look anything up while we were watching. I wanted to just have that in the moment experience. My initial thought was the cosmetic company from the Halle Berry Catwoman movie, because
that would have been amazing.
That would have been a really strange but awesome deep cut. But Janus Cosmetics is equally as great. On my second rewatch, the scene opens scanning across a black glossy mannequin, so a black face. Janus Cosmetics is the namesake of the company that the Black Mask Batman villain was initially connected to. It was his family's company, and he ran it into the ground trying experimental cosmetics, which down the line eventually leads to part of his obsession with masks and his own mask being stuck to his face. So
hate it when that happens.
Yeah, a great Easter egg. One of the things that I always try to pick out of shows or movies, and maybe I'm digging too deep sometimes, but there was definitely a shot in last episode of Harvey picking up the coin off the table. And we know coins and Harvey Dent have something. Mm-hmm. In this one, Duella, we see her pocket one of the Janus lipsticks after trying on some. She's redoing her makeup after they escape. And there's a shot of Duella slipping the lipstick into her belt or her pocket. And it's always that idea in writing where if you show a gun in the first act, it needs to be fired by the third act. I wonder, is there some connection? You know, there was the Smile X for Joker in the 89 movie and Access Chemicals and all this kind of stuff. Like, Joker and chemicals and Joker's daughter, like, the wheels are starting to turn. Like, mm-hmm, is something mm-hmm. going to happen that's going to push Duella even further towards her namesake?
Yeah, I did not think about that. I just thought that she was like, oh, I like this, I'm taking it.
Yes.
I was thinking of a very basic level.
And that definitely could just be... They did make it a point to show that makeup and putting herself back together was important to her.
Yeah.
And important to her character and Turner's character. They share a little bit of a moment while stealing the clothes and the shoes and everything else that they're taking from this department store. She comments how he's so buttoned up and stiff and a little rich boy. And she's wondering where that guy that flipped the truck is. Is he in there somewhere and will he come out? Seems like maybe there is a little bit of an attraction that they were kind of playing with there.
Trying to each of them bring out something that might be hidden. I don't know if it's better qualities, but hidden qualities in each other.
Yeah.
I also like how Turner's like, no, guys, this is a loan. We're going to clear our names. We're going to pay it back. And then the others are like, well, they use child labor to make it, so we are just victimizing the victimizer, so it's a victimless crime. I'm not saying stealing's right, but I understand their mentality behind it, but they're also going to justify whatever they do, however they need to.
Well, I like the characterization of Harper and Cullen looking at the world that way and what those lines were able to demonstrate. But it also has some tie to the comic is because Wayne Enterprises ends up taking over Janus Cosmetics to save them when it's run in the ground.
Oh, yeah.
So this could be a Wayne Foundation-owned store. And mm-hmm. Turner's like, well, I'm just really stealing from myself, you know, when you look at it at the big picture.
Yeah.
That's a very Bruce Wayne kind of thing to do. And so trying to stay one step ahead of the cops who have been alerted to their little pickpocketing, they run outside and...
I love when they're like, Harper goes, who tripped the silent alarm? And all of them turn and look at Turner. I just thought that was so great.
Yeah. He is the odd man out of this little group right now. But as they're running out, they run into somebody who's responding to the alarm and the silent trigger. And it's not just the cops yet. They haven't gotten there. It's Robin.
Yeah.
Which I really liked. I'm like, oh, like, Carrie Kelly's still out there fighting the good fight, trying to do the Batman and Robin thing and responding mm-hmm. to some break-in. And it happens to be her
new friends?
I guess they're new friends. She's just bailing them out of everything right now.
And then we go into the opening title screen and then come back with Gotham News Now with the manhunt continues.
I am liking that they're keeping the newsreel exposition at the beginning of a lot of the return from commercial breaks. I like that motif in the...
Yeah, I think it's working well. And we meet a new character, Mayor Hamilton Hill. He announced that they are creating the Blue Ribbon Task Force, spearheaded by Harvey Dent, to bring in these criminals.
Hamilton Hill, he's been around for a good long while. He's probably one of the most well-known comic book Gotham mayors. He's been through a couple different iterations in the Batman animated series. He was a little bit more bumbling and less corrupt than he was often portrayed in the comic books. And so when Mayor Hill is announced as being in this world, I'm like, oh, that's exciting. And I was like, which version are we going to get? The bumbling idiot or the corrupt, mostly bad guy who hates Batman?
Seems to be a mix of both as of now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so they return to their little new hideout, right? The clock tower?
Yeah, and I love that we get a little bit of information here. Turner said we had to steal the clothes because, yeah, at nighttime we have run of the school, so they have access to food. They have access to the gym showers. So I like that they're like showing that they have the necessities. But then he's like, but the lost and found is no good, so we needed to go steal clothes.
Well, yeah, it's a prep school and they're all wearing uniforms. So if they're stealing from the lost and found, they'll all be running around in Gotham Academy uniforms.
So Harper and Colin are kind of laughing about the situation, like really making light of it. And like, we have no leads, can't tell the cops, they're all dirty. You know, can't have any clues from the watch because... And then they make like a little mocking, they'll send the talent for your head. And Dwell is just like, this is serious.
Yeah, she is legit scared of the court and their involvement. The others may be writing it off as a myth or superstition, and she definitely believes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I again, that same kind of trigger my, should we be paying attention to this meter? She's fidgeting with a gas mask that she has while they're sitting around at the table.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, Joker gas and all that kind of stuff. Like, if she ends up having a degree in chemistry that nobody else knows about, it'll be very interesting. Just something I picked out there in that scene. But she is not comfortable and wants to get out of town and doesn't want to be dealing with all this right now.
And Turner mentions to them that he has a friend working on getting tangible proof of their innocence.
Yep.
And then we cut to Brody and Stephanie.
Said friend.
Yeah. And there's going to be an assembly on Turner.
That's weird, right? To have a school assembly like, hey, your classmate killed their dad. And if he comes asking you for help, say no.
So I'm very fortunate that I never had that situation happen when I was in school.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like it is the responsible thing to do to address what's going on. And Brody mentions that Turner is a most wanted fugitive in Gotham since Enigma.
I did like that was a good line, which we, of course, know is the Riddler.
I'm catching these things like Enigma and I'm like, oh, everyone's going to know that. But then I think back to when I saw The Dark Knight in theaters.
Oh,
and man. I went with my dad, and like afterwards, I'm talking to him, and I was like, did you know that Harvey Dent was going to be Two-Face? And my dad had read the comics, and he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. So I got to, you know, I got to keep in mind that even though I you know, have read in the Batman world and have been on the podcast of Brotherhood of Batman, there's a lot of people who maybe wouldn't catch things like that.
Well, and we're finding out very quickly with the show, they're pulling from such different eras of Batman and different references that they could change anything that we knew was to be expected. You know, Enigma could be the dean of the university. You know, we don't know that he is the Riddler. We can make some of these assumptions, but I think there's a lot of stuff that's in here as really pleasant Easter eggs, but until the world is fleshed out even more, the question remains, where do these characters stand in this universe? So maybe Harvey Dent doesn't turn into Two-Face. Maybe we're just being fed a red herring.
I would be pretty annoyed with all the hints that they've been dropping.
I will flip the table. but Brody also opens up to Stephanie about his concerns for her and her involvement with Turner and protecting Turner. And he's worried that she's going to get in trouble trying to help her friend.
Why is she telling him that she is hacking the banks?
She's an idiot? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why else she would just open up with that knowledge. And then I did like how he was like, you know, he couldn't even figure out that his dad was Batman. Where is he going to hide? And then the clock tower starts chiming. I was like, oh.
Nice. That was good. And that is her call. Not, I mean, it just reminds her that maybe her friend is hiding up there, and she goes to join them. And the rest of the group now meets Stephanie for the first time. One of them at knife point.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes super well.
Duella, always being the untrusting and edgier of the group, has a knife to Stephanie's throat from the moment she walks in, and she's not ready to trust somebody mm-hmm. that she doesn't know.
And Turner is like, yeah, this is my friend who's looking into it. This is a hacker chick, which she likes better than being known as the daughter of the Quiz Bowl host, Arthur Brown.
Arthur Brown, Quiz Bowl host. So we don't know if this is like a TV show or if it's just a Quiz Bowl held for high school or, you know, mm-hmm. any kind of academic competition. But that definitely ties in to Arthur Brown's comic book background
yep.
and who he may end up becoming. I thought it very pointed that we have both a reference to the Black Mask and Arthur Brown in the first two scenes of, or the first two parts of this episode, connected to Stephanie Brown. Those two characters are extremely important.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right, this next scene at the police station, I think was done extremely well.
Oh.
Where Dent and the chief are talking to each other and they can't get a hold of Ford. And Dent's like, well, he's been dodging my calls.
I felt like she was the commissioner, maybe. Or oh, okay. she's a lead detective. She's Ford's boss.
I kept referring her to her as a chief, but I guess chief. There is a commissioner. Probably. I don't know the difference between those besides Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, I didn't look up the cast or anything because Harvey does not refer to her by name. And no. I didn't see anything on her desk in the later scene she's in. But she reaches out. She's like, Ford better not ignore my call. And she tries to call Ford. And instead of getting a hold of him somewhere out on his beat or in his apartment, his phone's ringing at his desk.
Yeah, and they dig around a little bit, and it's in the box.
Yeah, somebody mailed him back his phone. It was probably lost, right?
Yeah, no, there was a head in that box.
Yeah, his head and his phone.
Very glad that they didn't do the whole, like, pulling the head out of the box. And then when they show that, you know, they're like, we got to check on the rest of the team. And they call one of them. And then over on the mail cart, another box starts ringing. Identical boxes to that. I was like,
a lot of rings, a lot of boxes.
I thought that was a great way for us to know, oh, there's all their heads. That whole team was eliminated without us having to see it.
Like, yes.
I thought that was very well done.
Well, I completely agree that not seeing the head pull out of the box or seeing too much gore, it was kind of softer and it was more subtle. And then when the rest of the boxes started ringing and you saw the whole mail cart full of them, I'm like, that is a lot more gruesome. And that unknown, but you're filling in the pieces yourself in your head, that's the kind of thing that'll creep you out more than just seeing a bunch of heads, I think.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
I think that subtlety was really well played.
And then on the news, they reveal that six members of the GCPD task force were found murdered, and they didn't have any further information except for sources within the department say that they were all decapitated.
Now, this is going to make me sound like a really old man, which I am. But I really enjoyed the fact that the, I've been calling them the teens, the group of...
The knights.
The knights are in their watchtower or their clock tower hideout, and they're watching this newscast on an old tube box TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee not a single one of those actors has ever seen a TV like that before this scene. And they're plopped in front of this thing and probably like, I don't know how to work this. And that was just going through my head as I used to have one of those old cabinet TVs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. So this freaks them out even more because this is verification of Duella's nursery rhyme that the Talon will come for your head. And the Talon and the court, how do they prove to the rest of Gotham that that was the culprit for the murder? How do they get everybody else to believe in something that doesn't exist? And Robin, Carrie Kelly, lets us know that Bruce Wayne kept journals. And perhaps there's some evidence if he was tracking the court, if he died with the coin of the Court of the Owls in his hand, then maybe that was his last case that he was working on. And if so, maybe that case was held in his journals. And we get the setup for this episode. It's a heist episode.
Yeah. I thought it was hysterical that she's like, well, it's a terrible idea. And Turner's like, oh, well, that never stopped us before. And I'm like, Turner.
Pump the brakes, buddy.
Yeah, this is episode two. You have barely been on the run.
He's Batman's son, right? He's a little cocky. He's a little full of himself. You know, he might get knocked down a couple pegs eventually, but right now he's riding the high, and he's got a bunch of master thieves that he's going to rely on, and they're reluctantly going to go along with it for now.
So. Yeah, but Duella's like, you're an idiot. And he's like, well, it seems like something that the guy who would crash a van would do.
Nice little
callback to earlier.
Nudge.
Yeah.
A little flirtation going on there.
Oh, so are they going to be Torella or Dweller? I don't think that they're actually going to have a relationship, but I feel like it's starting to kind of ship something there.
I mean, shipping Batman's son and the Joker's daughter, I mean, it makes for good TV. So whatever the name ends up being, I think we're going to see more of this romantic interest, will they, won't they kind of thing played out a little bit.
My vote's for Torella, just in
Torella.
Case you, if you're curious.
Torella DeVille.
Yep, that's what keeps going in my head. I keep singing the song
yep,
with it.
I'll be singing that the rest of the night, thank you. So the first rule of Thief School is never return to the scene of the crime. However, that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to break back into Wayne Tower and Bruce Wayne's office and find those journals.
Turner is actually pretty good at coming up with these plans because he's like, well, he had a private elevator go straight up to his office.
Right.
You know, he was like, I thought it was to avoid the press, but I guess not.
It was definitely his Batman elevator. And he puts together that nobody is going to be looking in the obvious places of Wayne security, right? Like, although that reasoning didn't sit terribly well for me. Like, they don't know who killed Wayne. He was killed in his own office. It very well could have been somebody on his security team who had access to the whole building. Like,
I think everybody's
suspect right now.
Right, but I think it makes sense that they wouldn't be checking their own.
Yeah, it's nice plot armor, too.
I like that he's saying, you know, my dad used to say that every strength is secretly a weakness. And Duella calls that a bat proverb.
Yeah, I hope we get more bat proverbs.
So Turner is trying to go in alone, and Carrie's like, no, not going to happen. Which I thought was like, oh, because she's going to stick by him, and she's going to help him out because that's Bruce's son. But we find out later that she had ulterior motives, but we'll discuss that later. We go back to the police station, and Mayor Hill is going on about the numbers, because the numbers are the only thing in the city that doesn't lie, you know. And he has a number that he's most worried about. And Dent's like, 34, because that's your approval rating.
In my head, I was like, 2? Is it 2? Are you worried about 2 when you're talking to Harvey? But they have no leads, except all of the banks at once were hacked while Turner was arrested. So it couldn't have been Turner hacking the banks. Who was it? Who did he make his phone call to? Stephanie Brown. Let's bring her in and question her.
Yeah, the ringer in, and Brody totally has an I told you so face.
Yeah, he's looking kind of troublesome in this scene. I don't know. The cops, they don't drag her out of school, but she's escorted by a couple of uniform officers through her school. But it's on the day of the assembly about Turner. So all eyes on Stephanie now, and she's going to be sticking out like a sore thumb.
But it's also not surprising. I feel like the police would be wanting to talk to all known associates.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she very well could be hiding him at her house kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. So. And we definitely saw in the first episode, her and Turner are tight. and it looks like it's not a secret friendship or relationship at all. They've been close since he was adopted. Why not talk to his best friend?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
All right, then we cut over to the graduating tower.
Yeah, the Bat Brats have made it in.
Very easily.
Yep.
And Colin Parks and the others pop up, and Colin makes a comment, oh, that's not too bad for a trust funder. And Turner's like, you know, I wasn't always rich, right?
Yeah, what were you, Turner? What were you before? They send Turner and Robin, or Turner and Robin go upstairs. So are you taking notes as you're watching this? Do you call her Robin or Carrie Kelly?
It goes between both of them.
Okay.
I think in the beginning, I called her Robin when she showed up in the alley.
Okay.
Because she was Robin in that instance. But now she seems like she's being Carrie, helping them.
See, mine went the other way. I've been writing Robin all of episode 2. And episode 1, I was writing Carrie the whole time.
Oh, okay.
I just noticed that in my notes. And I was like, oh, I didn't even realize that. Even when she's not... So she's not in character, or not in costume here. But she does have a new look, which is a red leather jacket, which I really liked. Is kind of a nod to the Robin costume without the goggles or cape or anything like that. But wearing red's a good look. They get to the elevator and they punch in the code, which Turner hopes still works. It's his dad's special code to get upstairs.
Yeah, and it did work. It was 1939. Does that mean anything?
I'm sure that's not anything significant. Definitely not an important year in Batman history or anything. So,
as soon as the elevator door closes, Harper turns on Duella and she's like, what's with all this team spirit? You never go along with ideas in our ears. And Duella's like, okay, because going along with the idea is my idea. And explains that she's just trying to get out of Gotham and invites them to go with her.
I really liked that Harper knew the whole time and waited to call her out about it. Mm-hmm. Like, that shows that Harper's still not 100% on board as well and is wondering what Duella's got planned on the side before she exposes her. I really like that from Harper, because we see in the next scene even more about what Harper's feelings are towards all of what's happening.
Yeah, but right now we just hear from Duella that she has a buyer, and Antiquities dealer wants to get that watch.
That Colin lifted from Ford. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's got it all planned out, and Colin is like, no, I want to clear my name. And Harper doesn't seem convinced either way yet.
So when we come back, we have Carrie and Turner entering into Papa Bruce's office. And this is the first time that his son and his sidekick see the scene of the crime. They see the window that he was thrown from and the writing on it. And we see that emotion cross both of them.
Do you think this was the first time that Robin was there? Or do you think she came earlier?
Oh, that's a great question. I hadn't thought of that before.
But it definitely is playing like it's her first time there. But I wasn't sure, like...
Maybe she tried, and that's why she knew how tight the security had become for Wayne Tower, mm-hmm. and she wasn't able to get in herself before. Because she doesn't have, although she has a rocket launcher, doesn't have as much equipment on hand as Bruce or Batman did, because we've seen her, or we will see her, take advantage of some of that when she gets it.
But we do know that she has been there before when Bruce was alive, because she immediately knows how to get into the little secret area. She gets the batarangs, the bombs, grappling gun. It's all there.
Which poses the question, if she's been there enough to hang out with him and know where he keeps his secret stuff, like, what is the excuse that Bruce Wayne, entrepreneur, rich man, billionaire, has for having a unrelated young teen girl hanging around in his office?
I mean, could be the same as Tony Stark has an internship.
An internship. That kind of thing. I like that.
I would go with that.
Okay. They find the journals right away and the remaining bat gear that was left behind.
So Turner pulls out one of the diaries, and it was from when Bruce was a kid. It's about the murder of Bruce's parents, his first case. And he's like, oh, I wonder what made him dig it out.
Yeah, it's not one that he just picks off the shelf. It's one that was left as if it was being read and set back on the shelf to be picked up again. It was open to discussions of his parents' murder, and was that tied to the Court of Owls?
And it was.
Yes.
Bruce wrote in there that the Court of Owls killed them, even though Joe Chill was the one that pulled the trigger.
Yeah, and I paused and rewound and paused and rewound trying to catch the pages of the journals in these next couple scenes. But one thing I noticed when he opens and starts reading immediately, when he flips the book over, it's all just straight written journaling. There's no like sidebar notations or anything. Mm-hmm. And if this is the journal he wrote as a kid, and that's what Turner says, is this was his first case looking into Joe Chill and the murder of his parents, Bruce has known for all of his time that the Court of Owls was involved.
Yeah.
And he has been obsessing over proving and finding them. And that is pretty cool. If it's that steeped into this version of Batman and his obsession over crime fighting, and that's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah, that is. And I wonder if Carrie knows more, if he let her in on anything and she's like keeping that information hidden from the others, or if he, you know, it's not like it's unlike Batman to compartmentalize and not give her all the information if she's going out on a mission to try and figure something out.
Even though we saw the grave site scene between the two of them in the first episode, she has given us the least amount of inside information into her own motives and characterization so far. We know the least about her from everybody, I think. And the way the actress is playing this character, she's kind of soft-spoken. She's very intelligent and put together. She doesn't do a lot of second-guessing. This is a smart Robin, but maybe she's holding back.
Mm-hmm.
And I really get that from this portrayal, is she's got some stuff that is probably going to explode in her face later. But as they find the journals, we cut back to Harper and Duella and Colin in the car, and Duella pushing them to try to leave.
Again, this was great writing. Harper being like, just because she's deranged doesn't mean she's wrong. And Duella was like, that's true. Just chiming in the background. And then Colin's speech about how he wants to stay and clear his name, not only because he chose it, but because it's finally his choice, and tells Harper, like, you can go with her, that's fine, but I'm staying for Turner and Carrie and for me.
Yeah, he wants to stop running from the things he's afraid of, and he wants to protect his friends. He considers Turner and Carrie friends at this point. I like Colin a lot.
Yeah, I do too. I
feel like he's going to be the heart of the group.
Yeah. I thought it was very cool that he said that there were times where the writers would talk to him to make sure that they were not like speaking on behalf of a trans person, but like, is this actually what you would say, kind of thing. And I think that's very cool that he was included in the writing process of, I don't know specifically if it was this line, but
if they're inviting the actor to participate in the presentation of the character, that speaks volumes for that team.
Yeah, for sure.
We get my favorite Stephanie scene of this show so far next, because we go back to GCPD where Harvey is questioning Stephanie. They both want to help Turner, and that's the line they keep giving each other, but Harvey's pushing. He comments on how, of course, she has a 4.0 in computer science, and she's just not going to roll over on her friend. She's not going to turn him in. And my favorite part of her so far is, I know two things. I know Turner's, I'm going to paraphrase here, I know Turner's innocent. I know that you have no proof, otherwise I'd be in handcuffs. And I know not to say anything else until my attorney's present. Sorry, that was actually three things. And I just love the moment of realization. She is an intelligent woman, and she catches herself in bumbling because of nerves, and she's mm-hmm. talking to the district attorney. Like, she's going to be a little bit worked up, but being able to correct herself, I thought was a great moment for her.
Yeah, that was pretty great. And Dent's telling her, like, I don't think the Turner did it, but I wouldn't put it past the Joker's daughter. And if he's around her, like, we need to get him away from her.
Yeah.
Which is a good ploy. I wonder how much Harvey is actually believing that. I wonder if he's going to be trying to convince himself that Turner actually is responsible because of this betrayal that Bruce never told him about Batman.
Sure.
So maybe Turner has secrets of his own. Like, I could see him justifying that in his mind as a means to get to the mayor campaign and everything.
Well, we're seeing him have to bury quite a few things in this episode. He has to bury the betrayal and the confusion in the opening scene in the Batcave when he sees what his friend's really been up to. He has to bury and cover up his emotional distress and grief when Ford and the other police officers are murdered right underneath all their noses. Like, is there something that he's presenting one look, but really behind it, there's something else going on? Like, but there is somebody who is going to offer him the help that he wants, hopefully. Because, one, Mr. Brody Lincoln has shown up to the GCPD to make a statement. Stephanie's like, oh man, maybe I shouldn't have said that to him earlier.
Yeah, you shouldn't have, Stephanie.
No, you dum-dum.
And then we go back to Bruce's office, and Carrie is packing up all this stuff that could be super helpful to have, and Turner is just reading the journals. And I'm like, dude,
you have
get the stuff, you can read in the car.
Now, one thing I meant to say earlier that I didn't, what I love about the journal thing is it's not like one or half a dozen books. Like, it's a full shelf. There's like 20 or 30 books of journals on the shelf. So Batman's been doing this for a while. And
oh, yeah.
That was a nice nod. I like that a lot.
So reading it, he says that Bruce thinks that Alan Wayne, who is his great-great-grandfather, was murdered by the court and that the Waynes have been hunted for centuries.
And Carrie immediately knows that Alan Wayne was the designer of Wayne Tower, the architect of the building, which I think is supposed to be a clue for maybe how some of the questions that they pose come up later. But the court has been hunting the Waynes for centuries, even before Alan Wayne, that it comes to find out.
I'm very curious why the Waynes are being hunted and why the court isn't better at their job. Because, like, is there something that the Waynes have to do to trigger them to actually kill them? Because why don't you just kill them all at one time instead of letting them continue to have children and new generations for centuries?
Yeah, absolutely. Are they hoping that the next one in line is somebody that they can manipulate and control, and then when it's not, they gotta bump them off? But maybe you make that decision before they have an heir.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that they want to get the Waynes on their side. Because I'm thinking it's a lot easier to kill a baby than it is to kill a Batman.
Whoa, they're Deadpool going back and killing baby Thanos.
Am I not?
No, I
am putting myself in the court's shoe. This is not what I actually think.
It is, but even, like, maybe just do it before they have a child, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, later teens, early 20s, if they haven't sired an heir yet, just end the bloodline there. But what do the Waynes have that the court is so concerned or obsessed, or why are they so tied together? That is going to be a big mystery here in the show.
And I like this line from the journal. In the end, all I was certain of was that the court was a fairy tale, no more than a nursery rhyme meant to scare children. The only thing real was my obsession with them. Despite my efforts, I found no evidence they ever existed. And they realize something must have changed his mind. Maybe it's in the last journal. But then they're interrupted, and we go down to the car where Harper is like, oh, security alerts there that all the cameras are down. But she didn't do that. All the motion sensors are out.
Yep. Somebody just turned off all the security of Wayne Tower at the same time. And it's time for the two teens upstairs to get out of there.
But before they do, enter Talon.
The court is very real.
All right. And I think this is a good time for us to go ahead and take a quick break. And we will be right back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
All right, we're back. And Carrie and Turner are desperate to get out of there.
Oh, yeah. Book it.
Yeah.
Book it to the other room and barricade themselves behind the door.
And they're talking over the comm saying it's a Talon. And Duella is panicking in the car. She's not really saying anything. You can just see her in the background, like, I don't know. And the others are like, okay, we got to go help them. They got to get out of the car. Duella just moves to the front seat and starts taking off.
Yeah, and rightfully so, because we only saw the Talon in a real quick flash in episode one, but he's on full display when he walks into that office, and he's scary. Covered in blades and leather and armor and very kind of, I got a Jason Voorhees breathing behind the mask. I'm gonna hunt you until mm-hmm. you're gone, right? Like, you're not getting away from this guy, it feels like.
Yeah, and we know that he is capable of decapitating 6 people in a night.
Yeah, so Duella books it out of there. She hightails it and leaves Cullen and Harper.
Yeah, Cullen's like, you can't just abandon them. And she's like, why not? Everyone abandoned me.
Yes.
And like immediately like, all right, there's going to be a callback to this.
Yeah, no one would come save me is her line. And out the door she drives. And Cullen and Harper, even if they wanted to, they can't escape now. So they head upstairs to help their friends.
Yeah, barely making it into the elevator before the police come.
While they are trying to protect themselves, Turner has the bright idea to grab some swords off the wall and jam one into the door to hopefully stop the Talon from getting in, but then arms himself with his own new weapon and accessory.
So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That definitely isn't a connection to somebody who I think he actually is. You know, it probably has nothing to do with the fact that Damian Wayne used to run around with a sword.
That is good to know.
But we did see in the opening scene of episode one, he has sword fighting skills.
Mm-hmm.
Fencing and foil sword fighting, I believe, would be different than katana sword fighting. But he knows how to wield a blade. So
yes. And they are trying to figure out a way out. And they're like, well, clearly we can't go that way. And Harper and Colin are like, well, you can't go down through the garage because it's crawling with the police. Carrie's like, oh, don't worry, we can fly out of here.
Yep. And
use a grappling hook across 48 story drop. Like, I would just be like, nope.
Another great line in writing, Cullen calls from behind the scene, have you ever used that thing before? And Harper stops him. He's like, I don't want an answer to that.
Yeah.
We're just gonna have to go through with this. And they zip line off to safety, all looking extremely calm for being 48 stories above mm-hmm. this raging city. And yeah, a man with a sword who, if he gets through that door before they land.
Yep.
but it works out and they make it.
Meanwhile, across town, Duella gets the antiquities dealer and it's a setup. The guy was calling around to figure out the worth of it and found out about the engraving on the back. And he said that you're worth more than the watch and pulls a gun on her.
She should have seen that coming.
She should have. She was too blinded by the potential to get out of there and away from Talon.
When the teens land safely and are making their way through the Gotham alleys, they're wondering why Duella would have betrayed them. And, I mean, she's trying to save her own skin. Like, she turned her back on her friends, but at the same time, like, maybe they all should have just hawked the watch and gotten out of town. Like,
well, Turner wasn't invited.
That is true.
But he's the one who realizes that that watch would only be valuable to the right buyer.
Right. And it's probably better that they weren't all present for fencing this watch, because somebody else is. Somebody else has beelined it across town and runs a sword through the buyer's chest while he's trying to pin down Duella.
Yeah, so should we talk about Talon? When we were watching it live and Talon first shows up, you made the comment, oh, well, there goes one of my theories about Talon.
Yes.
And it was because you thought that Brody might be Talon.
Yes. And I did believe that Brody could be one of the Talons.
But since he was at the police station at the time they were doing that, that eliminated him from that. But at the speed that this Talon got over there, I'm thinking that there may be more than one Talon.
Absolutely. To play devil's advocate to that, if you pause and get it at the right moment, one of the journal entries that we see a full page of has historic records of the old city map and notations done on the side of it. It says, historic records of the old city map have shown me a few underground tunnels that could be blah, 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 covered up by his thumb, by the court to move around the city. So,
interesting.
They may be so infested from previous versions of Gotham that they know how to move unseen through, and maybe even faster. So maybe that's how the Talon gets from the tower to this antiquities dealer faster than anybody else could. Or there might be multiple Talons.
Interesting.
If there are multiple Talons, they're both and all very scary and deadly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because Duella takes off. She runs to the car, gets in and locks it. And I guess the Wayne security was pretty impenetrable. But he stabs a hood so that she can't drive the car.
Yep.
And then
can't break the bulletproof glass window, though. So she feels like she's at least safe inside. She may not have an escape route, but she feels safe enough to start smirking and laughing at him. It's probably a bad idea.
Yeah, because then he stabs a gas tank and lights the car on fire.
And one of the things I took note here is he takes a moment after he stabs and leaks out the gas. He takes a moment to tap the sword on the ground and taunt her a little bit. Instead of just immediately sparking the steel against the concrete and trapping her in the fire that's to come, it makes me think that he's just not a mindless brute, like sent or, you know, programmed or anything, that there's a thinking madman under that hood that has his own enjoyment or his own derives something from his actions more than just a system that's been turned on.
Yeah, I think you are absolutely right.
And I thought that made him even more scary than just a hired goon. The little tap, 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 and then the fire. And she is in trouble. She's going to die from smoke inhalation, trapped inside this car, or she's going to have to try to get out and face the killer waiting outside for her.
Yeah, because he's standing there watching to make sure that, you know, he gets the job done, and he is hit by a batarang.
Yes, because to prove her wrong from her earlier statement, somebody will come back to save her. People do care enough.
Yeah, and so Harper and Colin are trying to get her out of the car while Turner and Carrie, or Turner and Robin, whichever one, are fighting the Talon.
This is definitely Robin. She's got her goggles on and she's kicking some ass. I mean, Turner showcases an exceptional amount of sword skill to go toe-to-toe with this guy. It takes the both of them, but they're able to hold him back for a while.
Did you catch the moment that Talon like threw a blade and Carrie deflected it and it went back and hit the car right by Colin? Colin pocketed it.
Yes.
And we did not see that blade for the rest of the episode.
He's got sticky little fingers. I mean, I like the idea of him collecting evidence or trinkets or whatever he's doing. That is a nice callback to the first episode. And that was nice of you to notice that. This is our first big action sequence of the show, right? Like, first time we've had a big fight or anything like that. I enjoyed the fight. What about you?
Yeah, I did too. I think it shows a lot about the skills of Carrie and Turner that they were able. I mean, Carrie's just hand-to-hand combat there until she gets out her flaming crossbow thing.
Yeah, that was awesome. Well, and there's a moment where Turner blocks a down thrust from this grown man, this killer, who's trying to stab Carrie on the ground. And he blocks it. And although it's in slow motion and there's, you know, a lot of fight aggression going on, it looks like there's almost surprise in Turner's face that he was able to do that. And then later we learn that he, you know, Bruce insisted on him being trained in sword fighting, and maybe he's unlocking some of his own hidden skills that he didn't know he had. And I, however, had a big rain cloud hanging over my head during this scene, because I'm thinking that these two teenagers are holding their own. They're both, one's a sidekick trained by a Batman. So Carrie Kelly, Robin's got some skill. The other one is a rich kid who took some fencing classes. And they are beating back, supposedly, the person who murdered Batman.
So I had a thought about that as well. Could it be Talon is only authorized to kill certain people?
Oh.
And those two aren't on his list, so he can't actually take them out.
So he couldn't perform the coup de grace. He could only disable or deflect them, and holding himself back was making him lose the battle. I like that a lot. I do.
That could be.
It makes me feel better.
Yeah.
That this guy didn't kill the Batman, the most superpowered human there is.
And my thought is there are multiple Talons. It took two or maybe even three or four or six or 10 Talons to take down Bruce Wayne.
Or somebody got a lot closer than they should have been able to because he trusted them. They are they are able to push him back. They're not able to beat him, but they're able to push him back with said flaming crossbow, which was pretty great. I mean, this is not a arrow on fire. This was her little rocket launcher fired in the chest of the Talon.
Yeah.
And he's blown back 20 feet into a wall.
And they stick around? They don't immediately run?
Well, you need the nice, like, posing shot, right? Like, they got to look cool for a second and then run.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not down. He gets back up and cracks his neck and realizes he's not going to be able to catch up to them this time. But I'm sure this is not the last we have seen of the Talon.
And then we go over back to the clock tower there. And we get another cute little Chiarella moment.
Because according to Cullen and Harper would have left her ass. However, they were talked into saving her by her new beau.
And Duella thanks Turner by saying what you did was stupid. And he's like, I had help. That's why I'm still alive. We need to stick together. We have a better shot at all staying alive. And there's a, you know, moment where she's asking if it was worth it to get that diary. And he said it was worth it. Don't you think that you're worth it as well? I'm like, you guys are really laying it on thick here.
Yeah. And they had the, you know, the instrumental singer-songwriter melody playing over all of it. And it was a moment of vulnerability for both characters, but definitely playing with the romantic dynamic between these two.
And this is where we learn that Bruce made him do martial arts and fencing. even though he wanted to play ice hockey.
I tried. It was street hockey.
Street hockey, sorry.
I tried for a good 20 minutes to research why did he drop the line that all I wanted to do in my old neighborhood was play street hockey. Was it mm-hmm. just a throwaway line? Was it the writers all love to play street hockey together? I cannot solve that mystery. And I cannot find any connection to known characters that this would be. So maybe they're just developing his own backstory.
That could be it, yeah.
Boy, that drives me insane. I did learn that the Gotham City hockey team is known as the Gotham Blades.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That was one of the bright sides to come from that rabbit hole that I fell into.
And maybe Talon used to play for them.
Oh, that's why he's got the blades. but he questions what else could his dad have been preparing him for if taking martial arts and fencing had been so important. There's a character in Batman comics, Azrael. Have you read anything? You have read stuff with Azrael.
I have, and then I've also listened to the coverage on the Brotherhood of Batman.
So the character of Azrael was destined to be part of this Order of Saint Dumas, is what it's called, and he is subconsciously trained to both become like a living assassin weapon, but also to not know any of that and to have like a trigger word or trigger moment that turns on those skills for him.
Oh, like Bucky Winter Soldier kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. And so I had a thought about that character during these scenes, and I don't necessarily think that's what's going on with Turner, but there is some history in Batman mythos about that kind of thing being done. And yeah, it wouldn't be a far stretch to step into the Jean-Paul Valley character in the Azrael system. We get some closure and some answers to what Brody was doing at the GCPD. Because Stephanie waits around for him to finish his statement and then confronts him and is like, why would you tell them all of what I told you? And he's like, no, I didn't do that.
Yeah, he said that he took the blame and that he's different from Turner because Turner asked you to put yourself in danger and I would never do that to you. I am helping you.
Yes.
He said, I just couldn't watch you throw out your life for that guy.
More romantic interests.
Yes.
Because they were the two making out on the couch in episode one. Okay.
Yeah.
So they've had a little fling, but it seems like Brody has deeper feelings.
Yes. I mean, it seems like Stephanie as well. The fact that she hasn't, you know, written him off after what he said to Turner.
Yeah. And she told him stuff she definitely shouldn't have been telling anybody.
Yeah. So in the comics, Brody is the child of people involved in the court, correct?
Yep.
We have no confirmation of that in the show, but if that's true, like, maybe that's why he is so easily getting away with saying that he's hacking stuff. Like, maybe he's talking to other dirty cops, being like, okay, yeah, I did it, but wink, wink, guys.
Yeah. Maybe his interest in Stephanie isn't personal. Maybe it's assigned.
Or maybe it was assigned and it has become personal, and that's why he's trying to help her.
Oh, that'd be good character depth. We cut back to Wayne's office to get a little wrap up with the GCPD finally making their way up to the office room. The Talon is long gone. They're questioning why the Bat Brats would break back in just to collect a sword, because they do notice that there is a sword missing.
Yeah, that's all the inventory shows. They don't know about the journals and all the other Bat gadgets that were in there.
Until just this moment, I hadn't thought. It's a nice door they've left open that there could be more clues and discoveries in Bruce Wayne's office if they've kind of closed the door on the Batcave, right? They've discovered the Batcave. They've taken everything out of there. But maybe Bruce was stashing things away where Turner or Carrie could find them if something happened to him.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah.
I like how Dent was asking, like, why come just for the sword? And the chief is like, well, maybe we can ask the antiquities dealer that was just impaled by one.
Yeah, there is a line of bodies that is starting to be laid out through Gotham City, and Dent is concerned.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for Dent to turn his eyes from this. Yeah, it's going to turn into he has no choice but to, you know, prosecute Turner.
And obviously those two characters are going to have some moments later on, and those questions are going to have to come up between the two of them. But I feel like Harvey is still at the point of having concern. Like, if this is a more than just Bruce Wayne's murder, I mean, the trail of blood could be leading to Turner, and Harvey feels, I think he feels a level of needing to protect him still.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know how.
Yeah. All right. And then we go over to Mayor Hill's place. Cressida standing by the fireplace, and Mayor Hill is like, oh, they watch you at your hearth.
Confirming Cressida wasn't just burning the last will and testament because it was Bruce Wayne's wishes. She was doing it because she is a member of the Court of Owls.
Mm-hmm. And she's just acting as a messenger in this meeting. And Hill's telling her that, hey, I'm trying to find them, but it would be a lot easier if I didn't need to keep covering stuff up for your executioner.
She's like, you didn't complain about it when we put you in office by killing your rival, did you? I really like the power play here with very little words that Cressida is able to put the mayor back into his place.
Yeah, because he kind of laughs and her attitude switches.
Yes. It's, are you not thankful and grateful for what we've done for you? And he's like, No.
Have you forgotten your debt of gratitude?
They are very powerful, and their reach is just extending further and further each episode.
And Hill says, just keep me in office so I can continue to repay it, which made me think, like, is this foreshadowing? Because we already know that Dent wants to run for mayor. Is Cressida going to be the one that takes down Harvey?
Oh, to stop him. That's an interesting thought. Very nice.
But then we go back to the clock tower here, and Turner is apologizing to Stephanie for involving him and unnecessarily putting her at risk.
She's commenting that she's not the one who just Catwomaned her way into the building. That was a nice line.
Mm-hmm. And almost came out a lot shorter.
More verification that the Court of Owls is real, and by exposing them, they can clear their names. But mm-hmm. How do you do that?
Yeah, and Stephanie's like, okay, how did the Talon know you were there? How could the Talon just cruise in and out of there without a trace? Lots of good questions.
Well, I feel like the answer to that question may be in a line earlier when they were in the office about Alan Wayne, mm-hmm. the designer of the building.
Yeah.
If the court has been involved with the Waynes for so long, perhaps there's something about that building that the court knows that the Waynes didn't.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
Yep.
And maybe they'd have some more answers to these questions. Maybe some of this would be a little bit easier to figure out if they were able to finish reading the final journal that they brought along with them. However, the last few pages of the journal of Bruce Wayne have been torn out.
And then cut to Carrie Kelly sneaking back into her house, and she unrolls those ripped journal pages. And we see written on there, what will happen when Turner finds out the truth?
What truth? We don't know.
That was a pretty good cliffhanger to end on there. I like that.
That was. It definitely puts into question Carrie's motivations. And the thought that I had earlier with could Batman only have been beaten if it was somebody too close to him that helped in the murder? That was brought back up. Like, what are Carrie's motivations for keeping the secrets from Turner that Bruce already was keeping? Is she only trying to protect Bruce's secrets that he was already keeping, or does she have secrets of her own?
Oh, she's got to have secrets of her own.
What are they?
Well, I don't know.
I want to know. I want to know. Out. Yeah.
All right. So next week, we've got episode 103, Under Pressure.
Well, I am very excited to continue down this trail. I think the show has surprised me with its depth of mystery and the lines that it has laid out for us to tug on and to unravel. Very interesting.
Agreed. I am really enjoying it, and I cannot wait to see where we go next. So before we end the episode, Jake, where else can our listeners find you?
Well, I do a podcast with my two brothers. We've been doing it for about 4.5 years now. It's called The Brotherhood of Batman. We cover Batman comics in a continuity order, starting with Batman Year One and going all up.
And you can find me on a couple other podcasts. We have the Stargirl After Show, a Swift Review, and What's New, Nancy Drew, where the last season of Nancy Drew is coming out in May. So definitely get caught up on the show and tune in for that.
Well, we look forward to next week's episode and hope you guys are enjoying the show as much as we are. Tune in to the podcast after you've watched the show.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
I watch this as an adult as a podcast where we reminisce about movies from our childhood and we see if it still holds up or we just say, I used to watch this crap. Check out the podcast to see what we say. Peace.